Today on CityCast Chicago, who will 1st District Congressman Bobby Rush endorse in this year's primary? Well, for nearly 30 years, the answer was Bobby Rush. But the race got more interesting last week when the 15-term congressman announced he's not running for re-election. We're looking back at Rush's career with longtime political reporter Laura Washington, who says his path to office was anything but standard. It's Monday, January 10th. I'm Jacoby Cochran, and this is CityCast Chicago. Laura, let's start with Congressman Rush's background. What was his path to elected office?
Well, he had a very unusual and, in fact, unique path to Congress. He started as a Black Panther, a street activist, a radical activist back in the late 60s.
Bobby Rush, Panther Deputy Minister of Defense.
We try to make people see that those pigs in the power structure, that they got genocide on their mind, that they're out to kill wantonly all oppressed people, and especially Black people.
Some point became disenchanted with that movement and decided he wanted to get into electoral politics, ran for alderman a couple times. Second time he won at a time of a lot big change and reform, because he came in the same election as Harold Washington. Chicago's first Black mayor, was a very close ally of Harold Washington, served a couple terms as an alderman, and then moved on to Congress. He was steadily climbing up the establishment ladder.
What were some of his most striking moments as a congressperson?
Being a staunch and consistent and persistent civil rights activist, never hesitating to be outspoken, particularly for African Americans. Even though his district is racially mixed and has been for many years, he is a race man, and he believes in Black empowerment and he believes in equity. And that's been his hallmark, which I think is not a surprise given his origins from the Black Panthers.
Yeah. The congressperson has gone through some very public and personal moments throughout his tenure, which included losing family members, getting cancer of the salivary gland in 2008. After treatment, the cancer was gone, but it did affect his voice, making it a little, halted and slurred. Can you talk about some of those moments and how they shaped his career as well as his activism in his later years?
His son was brutally murdered, shot to death in the late 90s. And of course, like anyone, that would have a huge impact on you personally. But he took that experience and he turned it around and resolved to become an anti-violence and a gun control advocate at a time when many in Congress were not, even in the Democratic Party, were not very outspoken on that.
Only a mother could scream that primal scream. I never will forget the primal scream of my son's mother sat down in cold blood on the streets of Chicago. It's time to end this chorus of primal screams in our nation, and it's time to end it right now.
Yeah. Even as a congressman, he was always very anti-establishment, even the way he dressed. You see him in a dashiki, you see him in African garb at events.
Yeah, before they were doing it for public
He was doing it because he was doing it, because that's who he was.
You know, one moment that really sticks out to me, I remember being in college. It was the day after my mom's birthday. It was March of 2012, around the time of the killing of Trayvon Martin. And he came out, wearing a hoodie on the congressional floor.
Racial profiling has to stop, Mr. Speaker. Just because someone wears a hoodie does not make them a hoodlum. The Bible teaches us, Mr. Speaker, in the book of Micah 6:6-8,
the member will suspend.
These words.
The member will.
These
suspend.
Words. He
the
has
member,
shown you, O oh man,
the member will
what is
suspend.
Good.
The chair must remind
what does
members
not,
of clause
what does
5
the Lord
of rule
require
17.
You, but
the
to do justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God.
That Trayvon Martin example is classic, because he wanted to make a statement. It was a symbolic statement, but it was very powerful. And he was slapped down for that. He was reprimanded because you're not supposed to wear a hoodie. You're not supposed to wear a hat on the floor of Congress.
The chair must remind members that Clause 5 of Rule 17 prohibits the wearing of hats in the chamber when the House is in session. The chair finds that the donning of a hood is not consistent with this rule. Members need to remove their hoods or leave the floor.
He showed how ridiculous that kind of rule was at a time when there was a crisis for young black men in America, and he was trying to point that out by donning Trayvon's hood and making that point.
Yeah, I know I read a report just a couple of years ago about the state of his church on the South Side, and that it was under disrepair and needed more attention. Do you have a sense of how he balanced being in D.C. but staying connected to not only his congregation, but, you know, parts of his district?
Well, I think, yes, he did have some challenges, some financial and economic challenges with that church. And I believe he got some grant money, might have been some corporate donations and some other grant money to do some economic development work. And it didn't come through. He wasn't as effective as he could have been with that project.
Digging a little deeper on the problems with Rush's church, according to the Better Government Association, Rush owed $1 million on a loan to buy and refurbish a church in Englewood. When Rush didn't pay back the loan, a Cook County judge ordered the congressman to forfeit 15% of his congressional salary to repay it. Another controversy the BGA reported was $1 million donation to Rush's nonprofit from what is now AT&T that was intended for a technology center in his district. That was never built. The congressman defended that to the BGA by saying the money was for programming and claimed that's where it went. The House Ethics Committee also ordered Rush to pay back rent on an office space in Chicago because he got it for free in violation of House rules and federal law. We're talking about the future of the 1st District next. Stick around. Let's talk about his district, Illinois' 1st Congressional District. I've lived in it most of my life. Can you give me a sense of the geography for people who are listening?
Well, it takes up a good portion of Chicago's South Side, Chicago's Black South Side, which is the oldest African-American community, one of the oldest African-American communities in the nation. But it stretches because of redistricting over the years, over these 30 years that he's been in Congress. It's become less Black and more racially mixed. It stretches now from the near South Side of Chicago all the way out to Kankakee, to the very far southern edge of the metropolitan area and beyond. So it has rural parts of the district. It has very, very urban parts of the district. And it's interesting because Chicago is such a segregated city, his district has always been one of the blackest of Black districts in the country. Back in the mid, from 2003 to 2013, I've seen numbers that show that it had the highest proportion of Black voters in the nation at that time. It was around 65%. It's less now, closer to 50%, but it's still a very heavily African-American district.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I live in HP, one of the neighborhoods in his district, and I've watched as it's changed. But I've moved as far as parts of the South Suburb. I worked in going down to Kankakee. And so, yeah, there's a little range there.
The interesting thing about that, too, is that he obviously has to respond to his constituents, and his constituents are not all African American. Not only that, but there's multi-class, multi-race, rural areas where they're mostly whites. But that hasn't stopped him from being outspoken on civil rights long before many others were. He's been able to manage to balance the needs of his constituents. And
yeah, I mean Frankfort is in his
yes
in his district, and I once saw a Klan rally go through Frankfort when I was in high school.
There you go.
You talked a little bit about how the politics of the first district has changed. How much of a shoe-in had he been throughout those 30 years? Was there ever a strong contender, or was it a pretty clear victory throughout his 15 terms?
For the most part, he was in his primaries. I think his first primary, he came in with 83% of the vote in the primary. And of course, he wins overwhelmingly in the general election because it's such a heavily Democratic district. I think that there was never a real threat from any of his challengers, but the most interesting and most high-profile threat was, of course, when a lowly state senator named Barack Obama decided to take him on in 2000.
One of the things that I think we need as we enter into the new millennium is somebody who's got the skill set required not only to deal with government, but also to be able to put government programs together with non-for-profits and the private sector to make things work for people in the district.
Congressman.
I just like to say this. I mean, I really have a lot of respect for both of my challengers. That's why I'm working so hard. But, you know, they have a record. I mean, Senator Barak, he represents a part of Inglewood. His district has always been in Inglewood. Inglewood's always been in his district. What has he done?
I can tell you.
You know, they have records in the state senate, in the state senate. What have they done?
They want to.
Because Bobby Rush was such a well-established elected official because of his own history. But Barack Obama didn't get very far with that. I think in that primary, Bobby Rush kind of swept the floor with him. And it was the only time that Barack Obama ever lost an election.
He did more than just defeat me. He spanked me.
He lost by like 30 points to Bobby Rush.
The last few years or the last few races, you've had some people in the early runnings come out on the position of like, you know, maybe it's time to go younger, time to go with somebody new. Was that the same rhetoric that you were hearing in 2000?
That's absolutely what you were hearing. Barack Obama was a much younger man. He had a different style of politics. He came from a different demographic and personal background, having been educated at Harvard, the law degree, the whole bit. And his argument was, it's time for a change. You know, I have different kinds of relationships than Bobby Rush does. I think differently. I'm the future. And the response that the voters had for him at that time was, we're not ready for that future. It's interesting because I think that you're going to see that kind of conversation in the debate about replacing Bobby Rush. There are a lot of younger people who've been waiting for 30 years or maybe even longer to move up. And there's some of those younger candidates are going to be making the case that it's time for that generation to move on, just as Barack Obama tried to make it back in 2000.
Mm-hmm. Like you said, there were a few people already lining up to challenge Rush in this year's primary. But now we essentially have a wide open race, which hasn't happened since, Tupac was still putting out records. who are some of the people we know as of right now who are vying for this seat?
Well, there were like five or six people in the race who were planning on challenging Rush before he decided to retire. And none of those people have said they're getting out. Most of them are not very well known, the big exception of Jamal Cole, the leader of My Block, My Hood, My City, who is an established activist, very well known. He's been very public with his campaigning so far. It's going to be a slew of people getting into this race. I wouldn't be surprised if you get more than a dozen or more serious candidates. People like Pat Dowell, the alderman, who the third ward alderman, who had been planning on running for Secretary of State, who just announced that she's going to go after that job. People like Jacqueline Collins, the state senator from the Southwest side. There's a lot of pent up interest and people are saying it's time for change. And so you're going to see a lot of people stepping out.
What do you think voters are going to be looking for out of a candidate come June? You know, parts of the first district have seen major development over the last 20, 30 years. And there are parts of the first district that have seen population loss and increased challenges. What do you think voters are going to be wanting to hear?
Well, it depends on which part of the district you're talking about. But I would think in the heart of the district, in the south side of Chicago, there's no community, there's no geography that's suffering more right now in this pandemic and in the assault on violence than the south side of Chicago. So I think there's going to be a lot of conversation around economic development, around reviving the businesses and communities that have been hit so hard. Someone from the suburbs who has never spent much time working with elected officials and community leaders in the city is going to have a hard time making the case to city voters. And that'll be the reverse will also be true. If you haven't already been out in those south suburbs, if you haven't been out to Bourbonnais or Kankakee already, they don't know you already there. There's not any demonstration that you've cared about those communities before now. That's going to put you at a disadvantage. I think someone who's going to be seen as a bridge builder.
I had the fortune of listening to the congressperson talk before the past election over at Healthy Hood Chicago, which is a organization on the west side over in the Pilsen neighborhood. And again, he was still as active as ever, wanting to hold the next administration accountable, you know, being out there on the forefront of missing black girls across the city of Chicago and wanting to do more for violence. Ultimately, after 30 years, Laura, do you have a sense of what is his congressional legacy?
His congressional legacy is that he's always cared about racial equity and civil rights above all. And he didn't need this awakening we've all been experiencing in this country in the last couple of years over the murder of George Floyd to tell him that race still matters. He's a race man through and through, and that's always been at the forefront of what he believes in and what he stands for. And he's never been afraid to say that. He was saying it a long time before it became popular to say it.
As we've said, the district, the first district, this stronghold, especially on the south side of Chicago for many black folks, it faces many challenges moving forward. Whoever steps into those shoes for however many terms they have in front of them will have a lot of questions to answer, a lot of people to be held accountable to. And we'll probably have you back, Laura, to talk about it more. Laura Washington is a Sun-Times columnist and a political analyst for ABC7. Laura, again, thank you so much for spending time with CityCast Chicago today.
It's been great to have this conversation. Thank you.
Before I let you go, a little bit of news, y'all. CPS classes are canceled again today as the Teachers Union and Mayor Lightfoot remain at odds about returning to in-person learning. CTU released its latest safety proposal over the weekend, which would allow remote learning to begin Wednesday and in-person learning the following week. Once in-person instruction resumes, the union said if 30% of students are isolating and more than 30% of elementary school classes, they return to fully remote. The mayor reiterated Sunday that she will not support remote learning right now, but she did agree to buy 350,000 antigen tests from the state that are intended to go to schools. And some good news to get you through. You may not be able to see Disney's Frozen at the Cadillac Palace before it wraps, but Stan's Donut has a Frozen-themed donut you can quickly grab until the show ends January 22nd. I usually prefer Dat Donuts, but I might have to try it out. For more Chicago news, stories, and events, check out our newsletter at chicago.citycast.fm. Thanks for listening. Talk to you tomorrow. Peace.
Following week. Here we go.